This podcast features graphic details of real events taken from letters written by inmates convicted of murder. Listener discretion is advised.
I used to care a lot. But after 18 years of solitary confinement with death breathing down my neck, some things don't matter as much as they used to.
These are the written words of Texas death row inmate number 999351, Troy Clark.
So if you can handle some honesty, I'll keep it real. I don't have time for fake-ass bullshit.
They're taken from letters that he wrote to us in 2016 and 2017.
These folks are fixing to kill me soon. I'll still be strapped to that gurney and have my body pumped full of poison.
I'm documentary producer Zoe Hines. And Troy Clark is one of over 2,000 inmates that my colleague Ned Parker and I have corresponded with in our work investigating violent crime and the lives of the people who enact it.
This is Letters from a Killer, a Podimo podcast. Episode 11, Whatever Makes You Happy.
At least once a month, I check to see whether any of the inmates I've sat face to face with have been given a date to die. It's a conflicting feeling. Hope and dread mix with a sense of inevitability and preemptive self-questioning. How will I feel when this eventually happens? If part of my job is to maintain some journalistic objectivity when covering these stories, do I get a free pass to feel openly sad or angry at this point? And is that even warranted after what these men did? With so many rounds of appeals to go through, stays granted and occasional commutations, I've yet to see the phrase scheduled for, adjacent to the name of a man I've met, but I know that time is coming. And I know that when it does, the conversations we had will take on a different tone, just as the letters from this week's writer now have. Troy Clark firmly denied the 1998 murder of Christina Muse, yet he was accepting of his circumstances and even made light of them right up to his last breath. Because Troy Clark is the first of our letter writers to have been executed.
This is the story of a man who spent over half a lifetime on death row. Let's hear his case file.
Letters from a Killer. Case file, May 1998. Christina Muse, Troy Clark, and his girlfriend, Tori Bush, were friends who had lived together for a short time and had previously used recreational drugs together. Clark was also a dealer. When Muse moved out, Clark apparently became concerned that she would inform the police about his activities. Clark and his girlfriend decided to ambush Christina Muse when she came for a short visit, attacking her with an electrically charged stun gun. Applying a stun to her neck, Clark allegedly said, "You should have kept your mouth shut," before binding her hands, legs, and mouth with duct tape. He then dragged her into a bedroom closet and locked her in. During this time, Clark played video games and sold drugs to a customer. He then moved Muse to the bathroom and asked Bush to get him a large board, which he apparently used to hit Muse. Bush heard a shout from the bathroom. She ran in to find Clark filling the bathtub whilst holding Muse. He then forced Bush to help hold Muse underwater until she drowned. Clark sent Bush out to a hardware store to buy the toxic material, lime. On her return, she found Clark in the storage room of the house with a blue barrel containing Muse's body and cement. Clark poured the lime into the barrel and mixed it up before placing a lid on the barrel, sealing the body of Muse inside. A few days later, Clark arranged for a towing company to remove Muse's car from his property. 4 months passed before the blue barrel was discovered in a ditch containing the body of Christina Muse.
Of course, we never know what our correspondents are going to write to us when we first reach out to them. But one of the things that became clear in Troy Clark's letters was that he was proclaiming his innocence right from the start. Inmates protesting their innocence do typically write to us in a slightly different way. It's often more of a campaign letter. It's very focused on the injustice that they claim to have experienced. And subsequently, it can be even more difficult to ascertain what level of honesty you're being confronted with.
With that in mind, let's hear the first extract from Troy Clark's letters. These lines are read by an actor, but they are very much Clark's words as he wrote them to us from death row.
I received your letter about the interest in doing a film on me and this shithole where I am caged. Yes, I would be interested in telling you my story. But if you're looking for a killer, I won't be able to help you. I didn't kill Christina Muse. And that's the truth. I know this place is full of so-called innocent guys. To believe all the innocent stories, you'd be a fucking idiot. So I don't expect, nor do I care, if folks believe me. I used to care a lot. But after 18 years of solitary confinement with death breathing down my neck, some things don't matter as much as they used to. I'll still be strapped to that gurney and have my body pumped full of poison. It just sucks big old donkey cock that I've got to be killed for shit I didn't do. As you see, I'll not be one of the normal idiots you'll be interviewing. But I'll probably be the only one that is honest. So if you can handle some honesty, I'll keep it real. These folks are fixing to kill me soon, so I don't have time for fake-ass bullshit. I'll enclose a copy of my chick's confession when she got arrested. It's amazing the jury never seen the video of this in court, don't you think? Peace out.
Troy Clark did actually attach a copy of this confession with his letter, and we have the entire transcript of it here, which runs to about 11 pages. And in it, his girlfriend, Tori Bush, explains her version of events that she gave in return for leniency. And it tells a story of how she, and apparently she alone, murdered Christina Muse. Tori Bush goes on to detail how another man by the name of Tracy Socia helped her to dispose of the body of Christina Muse. So now she's implicating a third person.
So we've got Troy Clark saying, "I didn't do it," and his former girlfriend corroborating those claims, saying she did. And if there's any truth at all to this, what we're now looking at is a completely different version of the narrative than we first assumed was correct. Now, her confession could well have been obtained for leniency or under duress or after significant extended interrogation. We do know that those are questions to be asked when it comes to confessions.
It's worth bearing in mind, of course, that Clark has been found guilty and sentenced for this murder. But if the confession is to be trusted, then maybe we are corresponding with one of the few genuinely innocent people on death row.
Let's return to Troy Clark's letters and hear what he had to say about this confession.
It is very strange that the video of Tori's confession never got viewed by the jurors. Frowny face. But you gotta know some of the history of the police in Tyler. Corrupt. My lawyer was best friends with the DA. I didn't know at the time. Or I would have forced the judge to give me another lawyer. My lawyer did nothing to help me. I was convicted and sent to death row because I wouldn't testify on Tori. When the DA came to question me, he said I needed to testify against her. I said I didn't know about a murder. He beat his fist on the desk and got aggressive with me, pointing his finger in my face, telling me I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do.
Clark was extremely flippant with that comment about the video not being shown at trial. He even drew a little frowny face. And these hand-drawn faces do pop up throughout Clark's letters. Along with his sort of impassioned outbursts, they add to a sense of anti-authority characterization, almost as if you're reading a letter from a teenager.
There's a sort of a petulance and a rebelliousness, I think, in the way that he's writing. And we did find out that he was also formerly a member of a biker gang. And I think that for me, this just increases that sense that this is somebody who wants to stick two fingers up to any figure of authority. He wants to rebel. He's got that rebel without a cause feeling to his writing.
We do see little drawings like this quite often in letters from gang-affiliated inmates. Sometimes it's people smoking a joint, sometimes it's people grinning, sometimes it's little faces in tears. And I think it's a form of expression similar to the exclamation marks that we were talking about in relation to a previous letter writer, Ricardo Gil. It's a way of relaying some sense of emphasis.
Clark also writes about the district attorney being supposedly best friends with his lawyer. And this seems to feed into his rebellious attitude. It's as though he doesn't trust anyone and he feels there's a conspiracy of authority figures against him. But he's also not going to be pushed around. And he makes it really clear that he wasn't going to be told that he had to testify against his girlfriend. So this all adds up to somebody who, for me, is unlikely to be cooperative with anybody who he sees as an authority figure, even if they're supposedly acting on his behalf. And this could perhaps suggest why the confession wasn't presented in court.
Perhaps if you don't cooperate with the people who are representing you, this is what happens.
This is Letters from a Killer, a Podimo podcast series.
Let's pause our episode of Letters from a Killer for a minute to tell you about our sponsor. Fashion changes, but true style doesn't. Even your timeless look can use a pick-me-up every once in a while, can't it, Ned? Well, you can get some help from someone who gets what you're going for with Stitch Fix.
Okay, go on, tell me more.
Stitch Fix is an online personal styling company that brings you the worlds of fashion and style. It's a fun way to find clothes that you'll love.
So you tried it out, did you, Zoe?
Yep, I went to stitchfix.co.uk/letters to set up my profile, and a personal stylist, Chanel, sent me fresh looks personalised to me in my colours, styles and budget. You pay a £10 styling fee for each fix, which is then credited towards anything you keep. You can schedule it at any time, there's no subscription required. Plus, shipping, returns and exchanges are easy and free.
That sounds great. Tell me more.
So you can even preview your stylist selections and be sure that you're going to get exactly your style. But if you prefer to be surprised, they can do that too. Stitch Fix does the hard work for you, making great style effortless for women.
And for men.
And for men. Get started today at stitchfix.co.uk/letters. And you'll get 20% off when you keep everything in your fix. That's stitchfix.co.uk/letters for 20% off when you keep everything in your fix. stitchfix.co.uk/letters.
This is Letters from a Killer, a Podimo podcast series.
Let's hear more from Clark's letters. He appealed his conviction at a later trial. And you'll notice the shift in style change in this extract, because Clark begins to write dialogue as though he's writing a film of his own life story, scripting out the exchange.
You know, I never saw my lawyer who did all my appeals. 14 years on death row and never talked to the man who was supposed to prove my innocence. Crazy shit, man. So when I lost that last appeal, I was sent back to Tyler. The judge asked me, "Do you know why you're here?" "Yes, sir, I have a good idea. You'll be executed in 91 days. "Okay, cool. Do you have anything to say?" "Nope." So then my lawyer admits he did a poor job. The judge asked me what I thought of it. Me. "I'd prefer you just gave me the execution date." You should have seen the judge's face. Smiley face.
So there's that little smiley face again. And there's something about this exchange for me that's actually a little bit sad. To refer back to that teenager analogy, it feels a bit like when you see a young boy shutting down and not engaging with the people around him. I do get this sense with Troy Clark that there's a naivety and a vulnerability to his bravado.
But you've got to remember that what we're actually reading here is the retelling of the moment when a man was being informed that his life was going to be ended. And all he seems to be doing here is just trying to show his complete disregard for the verdict. Is this a man who is just desperately trying to claim some sort of small victory from a moment of tragic loss, from the moment when he was informed that he was literally going to lose his life?
The subject of death row comes up a lot in Clark's letters, which is hardly surprising considering he was there for the majority of his adult life. But Clark also found ways to go off on a tangent and write about the latest drama or fight that he got himself into with the other inmates on death row.
Clark had previously told us that he had made his own speakers for a portable radio. And in this extract, he writes about how this knowledge of wires and electricity had apparently come in useful during a confrontation with his next door cellmate.
Hey, you still there? Hello, smiley face. How have I been? Peachy. And yourself? Been through hell with a neighbor who goes out of his way to disrespect the white man. I've told him to get off the stupid shit a few times, but he is a big 6'5" asshole that likes to bully folks. Well, I had my fill of him, so I pulled out the box of crazy and showed him how this old biker plays the game of idiots. He's a gorilla. And of course throws poo and pee on my door that didn't hurt anything except the clean crew that came to clean it. I got him when he was asleep. I put plastic over door. Flooded his cell by flushing my toilet over and over. So as he's over there, cussing me out, standing in that water, I had a cord, snaked it over there, and lit his ass up. You should have heard old boy holler. He got up next day, grabbed his table, and yelped again. No, he did not like that electricity. He was afraid to touch anything, and I told him I was going to shock his balls when he sits on that metal toilet. So he said, okay, truce. Ha ha. I told you 4-5 times to stop, but you kept on until I let the crazy out of the box. You threw piss and shit on my door. So that door is me. You think you could shit me down and walk away? MacGyver ain't got shit on me, boy. I've been here in solitary confinement for 18 years and never had a problem. I don't like bullies. So watch what happens next. Look at that wall in front of your cell. Psst, boom. The metal bolt knocked a chunk out of the wall. The rubber band guns are very powerful and deadly. Now, he's pleading to leave it alone. I told him, ain't no stopping G now. I'm gonna shoot right through you. It's killing game now, killer.
At this point, Clark's world was small. It was the breadth and width of his cell. And the only interactions that he could have were with those in the cell next door or prison guards. And here he is defining himself by his conflict with others.
So you might think of death row as being a really dangerous place, but funnily enough, we don't actually hear an awful lot about conflicts between inmates on death row itself. It's far more typical for death row inmates to write to us and say that when they were transferred to death row from general population, they found kindness and even formed friendships with other inmates that have lasted as long as their lives have.
One particular inmate that we were writing to explained to us how when he'd arrived on death row, he'd received a pillowcase filled with various gifts from the other inmates on death row. We've heard examples of this kind of camaraderie existing between people who are facing execution. But for Troy Clark, the experience is apparently totally different. He's had a conflict with his lawyer, he's had a conflict with the judge, he's now had a conflict with his cellmate. And whether he intends it or not, what he's putting out there is this constant sense of rebelling. I read it as an effort to try and take a position of control and power in all of these conflicts.
You'd think there's got to be a point when you must turn to yourself and realise, surely I'm the common denominator in these incidents. But Troy Clark doesn't appear to make that connection, and you're left with a feeling that his reputation seems to be all that matters to him.
Let's hear the verdict on Troy Clark's case.
Letters from a Killer. The verdict. The following details are taken from official news reports and court documents. During his trial in the year 2000, the state presented evidence that Clark had murdered two more people, as well as Christina Muse. He was not charged with these other murders and pleaded not guilty to the murder of Christina Muse. Tori Bush pleaded guilty to her part in the murder and received 20 years in prison. She was released on parole in June 2015. On March 31, 2000, Troy Clark was sentenced to death. Against the advice of his lawyer, he chose to speak at his sentencing hearing and said the following.
I really ain't got no story to tell. I just want the death penalty.
After a mandatory appeal, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals confirmed his sentence in November 2002. On Wednesday, the 26th of December 2018, at 6:15 p.m., Troy Clark was executed. He apparently laughed as he was strapped to the gurney and said,
I'm not the one who killed Christina, but hey, whatever makes you happy.
As the lethal dose of pentobarbital was injected, he said,
it burned going in. I can feel it.
Before grunting and then snoring, Troy Clark was pronounced dead 21 minutes later.
It's horrifying to hear this reference to the sensation of burning while being executed. Various newspapers at the time commented on Troy Clark's demeanour, and that comment, whatever makes you happy, demonstrates his flippancy and his bravado did in fact continue right to the end. I think it's worth noting that in early 2021, the state of Texas executed its first prisoner in almost a year, but didn't have a press presence. And that's caused a huge controversy because details like the inmate stating it burns going in simply don't get officially recorded unless there's a third-party witness.
We didn't ever meet Clark, but we did correspond with him for some time. And when we examine a story like this in that sort of detail, it's that which reminds us that what we're looking at here are the stories of real people. And no matter what we might feel about any of these individuals as human beings, this is somebody who was executed in what, in all honesty, is just simply a horrific manner. Before we conclude, I do think I want to raise a couple of points from the verdict, because Troy Clark was accused of having committed other murders. And that's worthy of some sort of exploration, especially since we have raised this question, was Troy Clark an innocent man who was put to death? Now, as you'll remember, the victim, Christina Muse's body, was discovered in a blue barrel, apparently after Clark's girlfriend, Tori Bush, had taken the police to the place where it had been disposed of. But in court, there was also testimony from friends of Tori Bush and Troy Clark, who said that they'd actually helped the pair of them remove that barrel, even though they say that they didn't know what was in the barrel at the time. Now, that raises concerns over Clark's claims that he knew nothing whatsoever about the death of Christina Muse. It contradicts that because it seems very likely that he was at least involved in the disposal of the body, and therefore he must have known something about her murder, even if he didn't commit it himself. And then when the property that he lived in was searched by police, they found the body of a second woman in the septic tank, and there is a third victim who Clark was also accused of having murdered. Now, we don't know the truth behind these accusations of other murders, and certainly Clark wasn't charged with them. But it does leave a lingering sense that even if Troy Clark was innocent of the murder of Christina Muse, there is still a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that he was a man who was involved or connected in some way to some other pretty gruesome crimes. In this episode of Letters from a Killer, we've discussed the case of Troy Clark, a man who was executed by the state of Texas, but who remained defiant right until the end of his life.
I'm not the one who killed Christina, but hey, whatever makes you happy.
When confronted by death, surely that's the time to be honest and truthful with yourself and with the people around you. So if Troy Clark continued to deny his involvement in the murder of Christina Muse right up to his execution, does this suggest that he may have actually been innocent? Or was his unbending sense of rebellion and defiance simply all he had left? And did that very attitude allow him to deny his involvement in murder right up to the end of his life?
Next time on Letters from a Killer.
We fought an extremely high-octane and intense fight. I'm landing jabs to his face and trying to grab the knife. He only managed to nick me twice. And after a few minutes, I managed to grab his waist and pin it to my thigh. I grabbed the blade with my left hand and twisted it out of his as I spun circles to keep him off balance.
Letters from a Killer was hosted by Zoe Hines and Ned Parker and is a Podimo podcast by Transistor Films. Support the show by sharing on social media and following the podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.